Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy this morning will be John Cass. He's making his way from the undisclosed location where the JohnCassNews.com empire resides. So he'll be joining us momentarily. But yesterday we had another tour de force performance. And this guy is like the administration pincushion from Ali Mayorkas, who is before the Senate Homeland Security Committee. The focus of the inquiry was less on the border and more on the disinformation governance board that has been erected by Mayorkas and the Ministry of Truthers. Rand Paul went after him straight away and in no uncertain terms on his lack of comfort, Senator Paul's, that is, with Mayorkas, the Department of Homeland Security, the federal government at all being involved in the determination of what is and what is not misinformation.
Do you know who the greatest propagator of disinformation in the history of the world is? The U.S. government. Are you familiar with McNamara, the Pentagon Papers? Are you familiar with George W. Bush and the weapons of mass destruction? Are you familiar with Iran-Contra? I mean, think of all the debates and disputes we've had over the last 50 years in our country. We work them out by debating them. We don't work them out by the government being the arbiter. I don't want guardrails. I want you to have nothing to do with speech. You think we can't determine, you know, speech by traffickers is disinformation? You think the American people are so stupid they need you to tell them what the truth is? You can't even admit what the truth is with the Steele dossier. I don't trust government to figure out what the truth is. Senator, government is largely disseminating disinformation.
This is where your local neighborhood libertarian comes in quite handy. Paul also challenged him for specifics. You may have heard him mention the Steele dossier. Is that disinformation? It's been established by the FBI as a document containing Russian disinformation. But of course, Mayorkas can't admit that. He wouldn't admit that. He danced around it, and that was Paul's point. You can't even admit what we know to be true is true. What we know to be disinformation is disinformation. But yet I'm supposed to trust you to be the arbiter of said category of speech content in the interests of national security. And Paul was also good in terms of just piercing this. Hey, here's what we do. We don't spy. We don't censor. We're just identifying misinformation and then educating. Yeah, but that has all sorts of assumptions on down the line. And arbiter of information is the primary one. You trust us to act in good faith and to set standards that we apply equally to information that comes within our purview. And the answer Rand Paul gave is, well, we don't trust you to do that. We don't. And even if we did, we don't want to set the precedent of massive government agencies being in this position with this authority. Mayorkas tried to push back with a hypothetical. It didn't go great.
Do not, under any circumstances, accept a vaccine at a FEMA overseen vaccination center, because they are actually peddling fentanyl. Now, should I sit back and take that, or should I actually disseminate accurate information? That's what we would do. Should FEMA issue accurate information that the vaccinations that we are administering in the sites that we oversee actually are the COVID-19 vaccines.
I have greater respect for the American people than you do. I think the American people can figure out the truth. And if you think the American people need to be told there's not fentanyl in the vaccination, feel free to say it. But the thing is if you are going to go around saying that you are the arbiter of information and of disinformation, I think you have no clue.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. The problem with Mayorkas's hypothetical, the Mexican drug cartel or some other enterprise is peddling online this notion that at the vaccine centers, they're injecting people with fentanyl and not the COVID-19 vaccine. What is the Department of Homeland Security to do about that? Something? Nothing? I'll come back to that question, give you time to ruminate on it. Josh Howley also had some questions for Mayorkas in this whole realm of the Disinformation Governance Board. He specifically focused in on the hire of Ms. Jankowicz, Nina Jankowicz, to be the executive director, and provided some of Jankowicz's recent social media hits for Mayorkas to respond to.
He's also advocated for law enforcement to be involved in policing speech online. Here she is in an NPR interview this year, just a few weeks ago, April 16th, 2022. This is Ms. Jankowicz, and I quote, "I shudder to think about if free speech absolutists were taking over more platforms. We need platforms to do more, and we frankly need law enforcement and our legislatures to do more as well." And then she goes on to praise legislation in other countries that involves policing speech. Or here she is on February 17th of 2021 saying that the free speech versus censorship dichotomy is false and calling herself in a TikTok video the Mary Poppins of disinformation, where she sings that members of Congress shouldn't be permitted to spread misinformation on the floor and otherwise taking to task those who propagate views she disagrees with. Here's my question to you. If your intent was to combat misinformation online or in the government, why on God's green earth would you nominate someone who is a human geyser of misinformation?
Human geyser of misinformation. That's a pretty good turn of a phrase. Yeah. In other words, he's saying, you know, she's a censorious crackpot and you want her in charge of this. And then you also want us to have confidence that we should defer to your judgment on matters of disinformation. Help me square that circle. And Mayorkas' response was, oh, I had no idea. But I'll get you whatever documents are associated with her hire so long as I get clearance from legal counsel to do so. Listen.
Were you aware of these? Were you aware of this information when you chose her, everything I've just shown you?
I was not.
How could you not be? Did you do any research on her?
Senator, I will not discuss the internal workings of the hiring process.
You won't?
Of the Department of Homeland Security.
Well, let me ask you about this. I'm sure there are documents pertaining to this board, minutes of meetings, communications about who would serve on the board. Will you release those to this committee?
Senator, there are not yet this governance board.
Wait a minute. There are no minutes of meetings about this board?
It has not yet.
You've not created any records?
It has not yet begun its work.
You've hired her. You surely had deliberations about hiring her.
The board has not yet met.
You had deliberations about hiring her, though, correct?
I did not, Senator.
You just said that you are solely responsible for hiring her.
In my capacity as the secretary, I bear responsibility.
You're telling me that there are no documents associated with this board?
I don't know. You asked for meeting
minutes. Minutes of meetings, documents pertaining to the board, any records or communications about who would serve on the board. Will you turn those over to this committee? Any document pertaining to this board, will you turn it over to this committee?
Senator, we owe you documents with respect to the work of this board that already are in existence.
So you'll turn them all over. You will turn those documents over to this committee.
Unless there is a legal basis for us not to do so, Senator, I will follow up with my colleagues on that.
Does it frighten you at all that Ali Mayorkas is a former federal prosecutor, in addition to being frightened that he's the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, in addition to his presentation as to why we should trust him and his agency well beyond Mayorkas' time at the agency in perpetuity with the establishment of these new speech monitoring powers? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line, David and McCook.
Hey, good morning, Dan. I had something like that happen to me that was very similar, only in reverse. I went to the South Side the other day to buy some fentanyl, and the drug dealer gave me a COVID shot.
David, you should probably alert Ms. Jankiewicz or somebody at the Department of Homeland Security so that they can put out some correct information about that. You wouldn't have Ali Mayorkas do nothing when David is looking for his fentanyl and he gets a COVID jab instead. So in that hypothetical, as Rand Paul said, well, go ahead and say it. You can go ahead and say that COVID vaccination sites provide the COVID vaccination. Oh, okay. Good. Why do we need a disinformation governance board to do that? And by the way, if this is under the umbrella of FEMA, how about that agency just puts out the information about what they're doing? And if there's social media conspiracy theories, they can be fleshed out. People can do their own fact checking. If it gets to the point where it pierces and it is perceived to be a real problem with wide swaths of the American public believing it, then you can be certain the Fourth Estate or some outlets in the Fourth Estate will intercede and write stories about it, and somebody will go visit the site and said, I was there and it's COVID shots. Now, I mean, the hypothetical is so ridiculous, number one, and it's more ridiculous in use as some sort of defense for erecting this new bureaucracy within DHS. It's ridiculous. Mayorkas is ridiculous. Chris on the Dan Ryan.
Hey, Dan, I'm a history buff, and I really love history a lot. And it's just really strange. Maybe it's just me, and I'm getting old and getting senile. But haven't we heard this disinformation board before, maybe 1939, mid-60s? I mean, can't these people wake up and say, wait a second, this has been done before, and it hasn't worked in the past? I mean, really, it's just amazing that I talk to these people that I work with, and they're like, yes, we need this board because there's so much disinformation with everybody, and now that Twitter's being taken over by someone who wants free speech, we need to regulate the hell out of them. And I don't understand this. This just puzzles the hell out of me.
Thanks for the call, Chris. I mean, that's the culture that we have now where so many people are, there ought to be a law. Something happens I don't like, something I notice that is untrue or I believe to be untrue. Where's the government to ride to our rescue? There should be an agency. There should be a law. Somebody from the state should be in charge of this. It's frightening. It's frightening how little people connect dots, understand implications, how cavalier they are with their freedoms, how, just incredibly, their default position is to trust the state, despite just a few examples you heard from Rand Paul, both sides of the aisle, and everything we've seen over the last 2 years, even. It is remarkable and frightening.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J. This morning is John Cass, johncassnews.com, Chicago Way podcast, which I just recently did a couple weeks ago. It was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. It was riveting.
It was riveting. John Cass, what the hell has happened to Western Springs since you left? You leave and the place goes up for grabs.
We left. We moved out. We moved to Chicago because we wanted to have our year in Provence and give
yes,
Lori Lightfoot and
You heard about the Summer of Joy that was coming.
Well, yes, and we thought we were going to have one. And unfortunately, what happened was we learned how to use police scanners. But
well, we're talking about Lyons Township High School. And this.
Our sons went there?
Yeah, this beating that occurred. This young girl, the sophomore named Heaven Washington, who beat up a freshman and has been charged with misdemeanor battery by the Western Springs Police Department. The person who filmed it, who sounds very much like a girl but turns out to be a boy, he has been charged with disorderly conduct for filming the beating. He responded to his charges. Not only was I suspended, they charged me with disorderly conduct, which is ridiculous because according to Illinois law, disorderly conduct in law is intentional disturbing of the public peace and order by language or other conduct. Yeah. All right. I know he's apparently an aspiring barrister, but you just explained why you're charged with disorderly conduct. But anyway, I digress.
It is Western Springs, after all, the place that elected Marie Newman.
Yeah.
That's why I had to leave.
And Jim and Jim Durkin, who are
on the street.
Indistinguishable.
Yeah.
He goes on to say, for encouraging Heaven to beat her ass, I got a 17-day quote. That's a quote from the video. I got a 17-day suspension and more, which I'm not obligated to share, according to the school. Heaven was recently charged with a misdemeanor, while the victim gets to live her life as if everything were normal. Well, yeah, as soon as she recovers from her injuries.
Why was she beaten up?
She was beaten up, according to this guy who's got a lot to say, because Heaven was out to get justice. I need justice for Heaven. LTHS has never done anything for any other fight that has occurred at school, but once when Heaven beats someone up, they start doing something just for me screaming in the video.
Justice, huh?
Uh-huh. Needs justice. Get the justice she deserves was the phrase he used.
Yeah, why didn't you post that, not Heaven Washington, whoever the filmer is, post that against the property tax bills of everybody in Western Springs, where you pay a lot of taxes and high taxes, so that your kids can go to LT?
Well, there's a couple of things here. Number one, is that true? I mean, he could be correct. I don't know. Is it true that there have been other fights at LTHS and there's been no police involvement? There's been no charges where charges were deserved? Because I got to tell you, John, I'm a little confused, and we've tried to get the Western Springs police chief on, Brian Buds, all week, and he's sort of bobbing and weaving.
They don't want to come on.
Well, I know, but
I hope it goes away.
Well,
and you're doing exactly what people should be doing in our business, which is not letting it go away.
Well, here's the thing. I don't understand. I mean, we can talk about whether Heaven Washington should be charged with a more serious crime than misdemeanor battery, because she should be. Under the statute, she should be charged with aggravated battery. And the response to that is, well, Kim Fox can always level up the charges.
Oh,
yeah.
Really? Is she going to call George Soros and Chesa Boudin and ask for advice?
That's funny, but it's statements like that combined with, frankly, the statement this kid made who was filming it, and just the whole nature of how this has proceeded. I really want to understand what the relationship between the Western Springs Police Department and the high school is. They've got a school resource officer on site. They've got a vice principal who was apparently told by the victim that she was about to be victimized. That vice principal didn't tell the school resource officer for some reason, according to what we understand.
Where's the school board?
Well, where's the
Play managing editor to you.
Well, where's the school board? Where's the – I mean, we get this missive out yesterday from the school that they're still investigating and so on and so forth. But, yeah, where is the school board? Where's the administration making a decision about this student's future at the school after she's been charged with battery on school property.
There are a number of candidates running in the district challenging Marie Newman, who is the leftist, so you know, and supported by the Chardonnay Antifa.
Well, the other, and the guy she's running against is just as bad. I mean, he's a pea hat Chardonnay Antifa type from Hinsdale, Sean Kasten.
And that's why I had to leave. I put the smokers out and let people take them, and I was out of there.
Here's the Lyons Township, the superintendent and the principal, a couple of doctors, John.
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
Doctor, you mean doctor of medicine?
Yeah, no, I don't mean that. I mean a doctor of Jill Biden. The Western Springs, this is what they say. Lyons Township High School is continuing to investigate the incident, implement student accountability measures, support those who are impacted. The School Student Records Act prohibits the district from sharing disciplinary information about individual students. However, we want to assure the school community that the safety and well-being of all students, staff, and visitors to our school is of utmost importance to us. We will not tolerate acts of violence on school grounds. So all the pro forma blah, blah, blah that you get from these blah, blah, blahers.
Right.
To borrow. Thank
Unless
you,
Unless it's your
Greta
child. If it's your child, then what happens in Western Springs? Can I tell you? There'll be people that'll come to the family and say, do you really want to make a deal out of this? Because it's a good school, and are you going to...
Black eye on the school. Protect the school. Protect the shield. Roger Goodell it. Right?
Well, I don't know, but I do say that my son's had a great career there in school. It was good academics, but and good soccer, too, Dan.
Oh, God.
As I read on the... On the Salem website, when I do the, you know, to listen to your show, I see soccer stories on the website. They're awesome.
I'm going to have to talk to
Mike Scott,
senior management, about that. Yeah.
But the bottom line is they're telling people not to be upset about this. They're basically trying to finesse this and stall it out.
Well, so on the police side, here's what we understand to be true from the reporting that has been done mainly by the outlets that I started with my friends, because West Cook News is one of them, interest of full disclosure, which I've disclosed any number of times. That's the difference between me and the
paper
and the Chicago Press Corps. I disclose interests. So here's the thing. We understand that Western Springs police are just getting around to interviewing the victim of that beatdown today. Why is it taking so long? I know the police chief was out of town last week, so what? Is the Western Springs Police Department just the police chief? No, obviously not. Why is it taking so long? What is going on? What is the relationship between that department and the school doing the whole, everything's fine, nothing to see here, we can't tell you what we're right. doing, but we're doing all the right things and trust us. And then yesterday, the Western Springs Police Department confirmed to West Cook News, I can confirm we're currently investigating a case that came to our attention that occurred inside the school at about 3:19 in the afternoon on Tuesday. And it allegedly involves another act of violence on school campus.
Mm-hmm.
And he can't, I mean, he wouldn't disclose any more than that, but there's some rumors the incident was in retaliation for the previous beatdown. And I don't know if it's in retaliation for the misdemeanor charges against Heaven Washington because she didn't get her justice, according to her cohort, or it was in retaliation against Heaven Washington to whoever's involved in plotting to beat this girl up in the hallway. I don't know which direction it happened, and Western Springs won't tell anybody, and the school says everything's fine. What the hell's going on in Western Springs, in Lyons Township?
It is a great town. It is the Mayberry of the area.
Mm.
The reason why we moved there out of Logan Square, too bad, Lori, we left you even before I knew you.
My grandparents on my mom's side lived in Western Springs. They lived in a cul-de-sac that, you know, bumped up against 5436 Central.
We lived right down the street. We lived on Lawn Avenue.
Uh-huh.
The 4900 block. It was great. The local public schools are fantastic.
Yeah, they were. You're old now. You're thinking back to when it used to be.
My sons are in their mid-20s.
I know. That's what I said. You're old. So it's like me thinking back to going to my grandparents' place with my mom and sister and all that and visiting. Oh, Western Springs is so nice. We go play at the park. And that's not anywhere in Illinois anymore. That's all what it used to be.
Wait a second. You got Casey's Market. You've got V down the street. A wonderful restaurant.
I'm sure.
And you had John Cass, but you didn't want him. You didn't keep him around because you let the property taxes go so high that I was paying like almost $20,000 to rent my house.
Did they name a park after you or anything?
They should have named a soccer field after
me. Yeah, they should have.
All the sidelines I walked.
Big mistake. Yeah. That was the beginning of the end for Western Springs.
Yeah.
Mary Kay, Western Springs.
Hey, Mary Kay.
Hey, John. Hi, John. How are you?
Good.
Hi, Dan. I pay $14,000 to live on a corner. I'm not telling you my address because I'll be egged, but I'm not going to do that. $14,000 for this, palace I live in, which is nowhere near, a palace. Highest on the block. I don't know why, but, there's never a reason why, right, Dan?
You got to call Madigan and Getzendatter, see if they can reduce your tax.
Yeah, I've done enough. It's a bunch of baloney, all that. But so they call this place Mayberry. It's nothing's further from the truth. It's all going on behind closed doors, all the badness that you never hear about. Everybody goes out. It's just like Facebook. Everything's wonderful. Everything's
great.
Apparently, it's
going on in school hallways at LT, so it's a little bit harder to paper over.
Dan, it's been going on for years and years and forever. My friend Jim called you guys on your birthday, and we both went to OPRF at the same time. Each ethnic group at Oak Park took over a floor. It's a four-story place. Everybody had, the Italians had their place, the Blacks had their place, the white kids. Now, we mixed because we played sports together and we had clubs and friendships. But people are clannish. But does that make me a racist? No. LT is a dangerous place, John, and it's unfortunate.
What?
It has been dangerous. Yes, it is a dangerous place. LT High School.
Really?
It's hard to believe.
I would say so. My daughter went there.
How long ago did your daughter graduate?
She's 20.
Okay,
21.
So recently.
Yeah.
Yeah. She'd be in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know about dangerous, but it's been this way for a long time. Well, and the violence has, pardon?
Well, I want to understand the relationship between the administration and the parents and the police, and when these things happen, how does this work? Or not work.
They don't want to talk about it.
As it currently is not working, it doesn't seem to me.
I asked my husband when I got home last night, where's the LT story? What's going on? Is the kid expelled? I want to know because it was rumored last week.
Right.
And he said, you think you're going to hear about it? It's not anywhere, Mary Kay. It's not on the patch. Of course, that stupid patch is useless. It's useless.
You'd think there'd be a column out of it for somebody.
Maybe
a columnist at the patch.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, John, you know how it is around here. It's beautiful. I love the town. I'd stay if I could afford it. It's wonderful, but, and we're kind of stuck, too. We have parents here, Dan. That's why. I mean, why else would you stay here,
I don't know.
I mean, the city, Dan, it's so sad. I live here. I live in a beautiful neighborhood. I was walking around thinking how much I'm going to miss these people, but I make friends where I go. I never stop talking. You just talk to anyone on the street. I tell everybody what I think. They all hate me.
Yeah.
Not everybody. Like,
obviously you make friends. That's good. You prune those who are not worthy of your friendship. That's
and
all.
Dan, what I'm finding interesting is when I explain to some of these libs about why I think this way, because I've come to my own conclusions by listening and learning and understand. I've been a Republican my whole life. Grew up in River Forest, got the whole thing. Always voted conservative, voted for Walsh, my father.
Senator.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Senator Walsh. When I was a kid, I was in sixth grade. I campaigned for him. And, so I got kind of, into the whole thing. And I've been involved in politics since I was a child. And I'm not involved, but I walk and
right. I got
you
it.
Know, signs
I got it.
up and all that.
I got
but,
it.
But a lifelong Republican, tell these guys, I'm like, if you explain to them and ask the questions like we talk about, the probing questions, they go, huh, no, I didn't think of that. I didn't think of that.
Thanks.
I'm like, yeah, well, start thinking about it. Thanks for talking,
thanks
guys.
Thanks for the call, Mary Kay.
The question will be, what will the Western Springs school newspaper do? The Lion, what will they do? Will they be allowed to discuss it? Or will Western Springs ratchet down, you know, LT, you know, silence the children? Are there any conservatives left? I mean, after I left, Mary Kay's out there, but
I assume they're going to run everything that school newspaper would publish through Myerkus's disinformation board.
Scary Poppins. Scary Poppins.
If Nina Jankowicz says it's okay, then it's okay. Bob Waukegan.
Yeah, Dan and John, best duo ever. My wife subscribes to the John Cass news on the internet, so we got your readout from May 4th. I read it last night. It was really great. But I was calling about Heaven Washington. She should be charged to the fullest extent of the law, and then she should have to change her name legally, and she should have to spell it every time she tells the person what her name is. It should be Hell, H-E-L-L, space, I-N, space, Washington. Helen Washington.
All right, thanks, Bob.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and in for Amy this morning is
the lovely John Cass.
Lovely, leggy John Cass. JohnCassNews.com, Chicago Way podcast as well. JohnCassNews.com is where you get it all. And subscribe. And John,
and thanks to everybody out there who subscribes.
Yeah,
I really mean it.
Yeah,
thank you. I can't do this work without you. And you know, I guess I'll keep going as long as you subscribe.
Keep on trucking. Yeah,
apparently.
Yeah. So the leaking of the draft opinion in the Dobbs case, in which Alito makes the case for overturning Roe v. Wade and returning the issue to the states for legislative bodies and gubernatorial bodies to figure.
It's called federalism.
Yeah. That has provided the occasion for the left to go to their favorite posture. Moral panic, hysteria, apocalyptic screeching. I introduce you, if you're not familiar with her, to Anna Kasparian. She is one of the Young Turks. By the way, those Young Turks are aging. They're not so young anymore, especially that Sank guy, who's a real clown.
Also, I thought that the Armenians were destroyed by the Turks.
Yes.
Just saying.
Well.
As a Greek, I can say that. Right?
Yes. We'll discuss the Armenian genocide another time. But Kasparian has this question. She demands be asked, particularly of her peeps, those Democrat socialists who've let her down.
We don't even have paid family leave. We don't even have affordable child care in this freaking country. Okay? And the people who fight against those kinds of laws are Republicans.
And yet...
What do you want them to do with their kids when they have to go to work? What do you want them to do? What do you want them to do? I want them to answer that freaking question. Answer the question. Journalists, ask them the question. Ask them.
Isn't it amazing?
Ask them the goddamn question. God.
Isn't it amazing that not one Democrat has shown 1% of the passion that Anna has today?
They don't care.
They don't care.
They're all so old, they don't even have to worry about it affecting them. And if they're young enough where it would affect them, they'll get their abortion.
They're going to fly to
Paris. They're trading individual stocks, enriching themselves. They're good. They don't care about you. Make sure you understand that and you feel it in your bones. They don't care about you at all.
Tiny violin.
All of that fundraising, all of that canvassing, all of that hard work on the ground, they can't even even get a voting rights bill passed. They're losers.
She's on voting rights.
Trisha Briggs writes in.
Yeah.
Because.
Powerful.
That's unity. Democratic unity.
It's a powerful statement.
Uh-huh.
John, she's asked a question. Answer the question.
Which one?
Answer the question. Answer it.
Dan's doing a imitation of that young woman that was outside the Supreme Court when Trump was elected, and she was screaming, sitting on the ground, screaming, no.
Well, Anna Kasparian was doing an impersonation of that. So, yeah, what are parents to do when they have to go to work? Apparently, kill their children. That's the only option.
Guess what we did? I worked, and I wasn't about not to work because I wasn't going to be – I'm not the husband. I mean, I am the husband. I go to work.
Yeah.
But we had – you know what this amazing thing? It's called Grandma. Betty worked at the store.
Yeah.
At my brother and dad's store. I was working at the at the paper. I don't use the name. And guess who was there? Grandma.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what people do.
And what if you don't have the privilege?
You don't move
the Greek
away.
Privilege of a grandmother.
You don't go out to California on your own, and then start a family and wonder, where's my support group?
I don't understand. Like, just the question. You can scream it as loud as you want. What are parents supposed to do if the right to abortion is restricted with their kids? Well, they're already your kids.
She's
future parents that will not be able to afford daycare, even though daycare is wildly subsubsidized for low-income families. But setting that aside, wasn't subsidized.
Is that post-birth abortion they're talking about?
Up to the age of 18?
18, because it looks like, I mean, I used to, you know, used to say as parents, I'm going to strangle you. But I really didn't mean it. And now I guess they want to.
She wasn't the only one in performative histrionics. On Tuesday night, Reparation H, the vice president of the United States, yeah. She was at the Emily's List Gala, which is a big pro-abort group that funds Democrat socialists, pro-abort Democrat socialists at the federal level.
I'd like to take you to an Emily's List Gala.
As your date?
I had to stay.
We'd fit right in.
You know what? It's like walking across an icy river up to your chest with no waders on. Okay? Let me just put it
that's
way.
Good news. So I'll be dead in 90 seconds?
You'll be dead. As soon as you stand there and watch Bobber Wawa come out and all these other people with the Botox, you're going to just.
Well, here was Kamala's offering.
Those Republican leaders who are trying to weaponize the use of the law against women. Well, we say, how dare they? How dare they tell a woman what she can do and cannot do with her own body? How dare they? How dare they try to stop her from determining her own future? How dare they try to deny women their rights and their freedoms?
How dare you?
Yeah.
Nice.
Huh?
Nice. It's the same thing. And can you imagine being married to that? I don't know. I mean, even if Willie Brown would give you an interlude, you know, I just couldn't. I couldn't handle that.
How do you even respond to the Anna Kasparians, the Kamala Harris's, the big guy, even? President of the United States, Joe Biden, offer this, the slippery slope argument. So now you're hearing, you know, the oppression argument. Pro-life men are trying to oppress pro-abortion women in some form or fashion. Now you hear the slippery slope argument from the big guy.
What happens if you have a state change the law saying that children who are LGBTQ can't be in classrooms with other children? Is that legit under the way that the decision is written? What are the next things that are going to be attacked? Because this MAGA crowd is really the most extreme political organization that's existed in American history. in recent American history.
The most extreme organization political history, this MAGA group. This is not a MAGA plebiscite, by the way, on the Dobbs case. Supreme Court justices. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. The slippery slope argument, what's next? Trans kids being separated in the classroom? What?
What's next will be you can't establish your son as your bag man in China, in Ukraine, and then talk about people going to war in Ukraine, okay? That would be one.
This guy's supposed to be a lawyer, seriously, and he pretended for a while that he was a law professor. That's part of the fabulous Joe Biden, fabulist.
Yeah.
What do you? I mean,
did he read the? Did you read the opinion? Because I've looked
yes.
at it. Alito is specific, in no uncertain terms, that all this is being discussed in this draft opinion is abortion.
Right. So
there's no like.
Yes, that's an important point. Yeah. But I've read the diatribes on the left that attempt to, focus on the law, which is rare for the left to do. And they said, well, this is a slippery slope. Now they're coming after Griswold and Texas v. Johnson and Obergefell. It's ridiculous. And Joe Biden just is making stuff up out of whole cloth that is it's a complete non sequitur. It's just remarkable that the stuff that he gets away with, without pushback, except for somebody like us, some buddies like us to take it on a radio show and have to dissect it because the D.C. press corps just dutifully scribbles it down.
You're telling me that Yamiche Alcindor did not call him out on that? or Chuck Todd?
It's just comical. I mean, they just don't know anything about anything. They don't care because they believe that hysteria works. They'll just whip enough people into a frenzy or make enough people afraid or just exhaust enough people through their screeching that they can hang on. I mean, more from Pramila Jayapal, who's the head socialist Spice Girl. She's the head of the socialist Spice Girls in the House Dem caucus. We played her yesterday for her previous media appearance where she said the Supreme Court doesn't have the right to adjudicate cases, essentially. And now she says this.
This is government mandated pregnancy, and it is an outrage. And I think it is really it really undermines and delegitimizes the Supreme Court as a body that can make decisions that are not just purely political.
Government mandated pregnancy.
You see that the left, all they're doing is trying to gin up emotion and hysteria. And that's the same with their counterparts in the media. That's all they do. Emotion, hysteria, or Beavis and Butthead, fifth grade humor. It's the depth, the lack of depth is astounding. You could find critics of the Alito position, good ones, but there are few and far between now. Because liberals have been devoured. The old liberals that we knew have been devoured by the left.
They're like surrender Republicans. They don't feel the need to have to make an argument. They don't feel the need to have to present evidence or offer some sort of logical thread that explains their position. They just take a position and they scream at you and they call you names if you disagree. That's discourse. And then if you continue disagreeing, then they have a disinformation governance board that will come see you or expunge you.
That's why this is a job for Nina Jankowicz. Everything is a job for her.
Jeff and Berwyn, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Greetings, Dan and John.
Hey, Jeff.
John, it's always great to hear your voice when you fill in for Amy.
Jeff, can you please stop at Freddy's and pick me up a slice? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I got some friends in Cicero that could help you with that, too.
Go ahead, talk
Jeff.
To me about that later.
Yeah.
The slippery slope comment that Brandon made started in January of 1973. Back then, it was the first trimester that was considered okay. Okay? 49 years later, you have partial birth abortion, where when the baby's head comes out of the the birth canal, it's okay for a doctor to stick an ice pick in its head to kill it and then mutilate it. If that's not murder, then I don't know what is. And that is the real slippery slope.
Thanks, Jeff.
Happy Mother's Day.
Frank, Arlington Heights.
Well, that's beyond murder. That's almost like in ancient Carthage when the people would put their babies on the hands of Baal, the god, and sacrifice it. That's what it is. That's what that thing that your last caller just described, that's what that's like. But so many things to talk about here. I mean, Marbury versus Madison. I just taught that in my executive power unit. I guess that's out the door, according to whichever representative.
No judicial review anymore. Right.
Yeah, no judicial review anymore.
At least not in this case. Not on this case.
Yeah.
On other cases.
Because
maybe.
Feelings, man. Feelings.
Ones that are important to the liberals, where they want to just tell everybody how to live their lives, essentially. Then they can do it. But when I hear these screech owls, Dan, I always think of Margaret Thatcher. And how she said that most of the problems in the world are basically caused by people being ruled and thinking with their emotions, and people who rule with their emotions rather than thinking things through. And that's what this is, pure unadulterated emotions. And then my last point is that led me to remember one of the things that I learned in high school, one of the books I read in high school, Jean-Paul Sartre, No Exit.
Mm-hmm.
Hell is other people. When you really hear people like that, that's what I just get reminded of.
One of my favorite observations, and I'm not an existentialist. Thanks for the call, Frank. We told you who
his girlfriend was a screamer. I'm just saying.
Hi-o. Well, what about Edvard Munch? That's why Munch's the screamer is screaming.
Listen,
because of his girlfriend.
I put that picture of the screamer on my desk at City Hall, so that every time Rich Daley walked in, he'd have to see it. No comment.
By the way, just as a quick aside, you've heard about the new Chicago water campaign, Chicago, that triple threat, you know, the mayor with the biggest joint in town, that she
Dallas Maximus.
She rolled out.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Chicago. Was I right? I said yesterday that's how Richie Daley pronounced Chicago, Chicagua. So he deserves some sort of acknowledgement.
I think that W was lost in the wet mayor comment of years ago. But those of you who read it then understand. Chicagua.
All right. You've heard how the left characterizes pro-lifers. How about just learning about how the pro-aborts characterize themselves? They tell lies about us. We let them tell the truth about themselves. That's the difference. And it's so enjoyable because they make it so easy. We'll do that after this.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J. This morning is John Cass, johncassnews.com. And, John, there's the old saw about when people tell you who they are, believe them. I tend to. That certainly is true for the pro-abort left. And we've seen this play out over the last several years leading up into this Dobbs case that's before the court as we anxiously await the final opinion that's released by the court.
When they should release it now.
They should be, yes, moving in that direction. Completely agree. Kathy Tran, remember this? You know, some institutional knowledge is, I think, always useful. Some reference points in this discussion about where we're at. Thinking about where some not just also what is within the bounds of the Constitution, the quality of the argument that was made in Roe v. Wade, which is completely lacking, as Alito nicely outlines. There was no legal argument. It was an op-ed dressed up as a legal opinion, much like Kennedy's majority opinion in Obergefell. But I digress. The pro-abort left, where the left is in this country on abortion, as they try to project the extremist label onto those who promote a culture of life. Kathy Tran, member of the House of Delegates in Virginia, testifying about her, I don't know how else to say it, infanticide legislation back in 2019.
Delegate Tran.
Yes, sir.
How late in a pregnancy would your bill apply if a physician would simply willing to certify that the continuation of the pregnancy would impair the mental health of, the woman? How late are we talking about?
So the way the suggestion that we've made in the bill is to say it's in the third trimester and at the, you know, with the certification of the physician. So
how late in the third trimester would you be able to do that?
You know, it's very unfortunate that our physicians, witnesses, were not able to attend today to speak specifically.
No, I'm talking
that.
About your bill. How late in the third trimester could a physician perform an abortion if he indicated it would impair the mental health of the woman?
Or physical health.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm talking about the mental health.
So, I mean, through the third trimester. The third trimester goes all the way up to 40 weeks.
Okay. But to the end of the third trimester.
Yep. I don't think we have a limit in the bill.
So,
ask her.
Where it's obvious that a woman is about to give birth, she has physical signs of that she is about to give a birth, would that still be a point at which she could request an abortion if she was so certified? She's dilating.
Mr. Chairman, that would be a decision that the doctor, the physician, and the woman would
I understand
make
that.
At that
I'm asking
point.
If your bill allows that.
My bill would allow that, yes.
Mm-hmm. And
no further questions, Your Honor.
That exchange prompted this now infamous comment from the governor at the time in Virginia, Ralph KKK Northam. Remember this classic?
There are, you know, when we talk about third trimester abortions, these are done with the consent of obviously the mother, with the consent of the physicians, more than one physician, by the way. And it's done in cases where there may be severe deformities, there may be a fetus that's non-viable. So in this particular example, if a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mothers.
Mm-hmm. So that's a baby outside of the womb. It would be made comfortable. And then Ralph Northam, who's a pediatrician, would have a conversation with the parent or the mom about whether or not to kill the child outside of the womb.
Make it comfortable. Listen to the reasonable tone. The reasonable tone of the commentary.
They're so reasonable. It's a good point. They're so reasonable when it comes to explaining barbarism. Mm-hmm. And they're so hysterical when it comes to protesting for their rights. You see that little two-step that they do. Mm-hmm. And so talking about, oh, people are governed by their emotions. I mean, do statements like those made by Delegate Tran or Governor Northam, does that draw an emotional response? I mean, do people understand the implications, or are they just lulled by the timbre of the politician's voice?
The soft voice allows them to do bestial things.
I think there's a lot to that. I mean, I've said, you know, Sacca Durbin, our senior senator here, he's been getting away with saying completely unreasonable things in a reasonable tone of voice for decades.
Are you an Orthodox Christian? Yeah, I am, Dick.
Durbin to you, sir. Yeah. Right. How about this? Generate an emotional response? Ron Paul, Dr. Ron Paul, writing about abortion. On one occasion in the 1960s, when abortion was still illegal, I witnessed, while visiting a surgical suite as an OBGYN resident, the abortion of a fetus that weighed approximately 2 pounds. It was placed in a bucket, crying and struggling to breathe, and the medical personnel pretended not to notice. Soon the crying stopped. This harrowing event forced me to think more seriously about this issue, this important issue. The same day in the OB suite, an early delivery occurred, and the infant born was only slightly larger than the one that was just aborted. But in this room, everybody did everything conceivable to save the child's life. My conclusion that day was that we were overstepping the bounds of morality by picking and choosing who should live and who should die. These were human lives. There was no consistent moral basis to the value of life under these circumstances. Some people believe that being pro-choice is being on the side of freedom. I've never understood how an act of violence, killing a human being, albeit a small one in a special place, is portrayed as a precious right. What about that?
Well, I know what Joe Biden would call you, the worst kind of extremist.
I'm part of that MAGA crowd, the most extremist group in American history, or recent American history, or some segment of American history.
And I'm not even part of MAGA crowd, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I am an extremist to him, too.
Mm-hmm. How about, you know, just going back in time, because this is treated as some sort of unanimous decision that settled the issue, and there was no criticism of the opinion at the time, and everybody's come to agree and come to rely on this. Archibald Cox, Wall Street Journal dug this up. Archibald Cox, the special prosecutor in Watergate, had this to say in a lecture he delivered at Oxford in 76, so 3 years after the Roe decision. The opinion fails to even consider what I would suppose to be the most important compelling interest of the state in prohibiting abortion, the interest in maintaining the respect for the paramount sanctity of human life, which has always been at the center of Western civilization. The failure to confront the issue in principle terms leaves the opinion to read like a set of hospital rules and regulations whose validity is good enough this week but will be destroyed with new statistics upon the medical risks of childbirth and abortion, or new advances in providing for the separate existence of the fetus. Neither historian, layman, nor lawyer will be persuaded that all the deaths prescribed in Roe v. Wade are part of either natural law or the Constitution. If only people still read and talked about viewpoints like that and offered some consideration for the implications of the positions they're taking. I mean, I know our listeners do, but that's not enough.
In the sea of lukewarm tapioca that is Chicago radio, the banal and stupid commentary of many on Chicago radio, what you're accomplishing and driving for, all of you here at AM 560 is a service and extremely important.
Well, it's also reminding people that, their common sense positions, principal positions they've come to, they have a lot more support than you might think by just taking a quick review of said banal Chicago media or D.C. press corps outlets as well. This idea that's being promoted. So on the one hand, they just sort of dismiss the law, dismiss the role of the justice, attack the judiciary, whoever the leaker is and whoever may or may not have aided and abetted the leaker. But also then they also alternatively make the argument about public opinion. 78% of Americans support abortion. Well, let's look at public opinion. Economist YouGov poll. April 30th to May 3rd, so recent, 1,500 U.S. adults. Do you think it should be possible for women to legally obtain an abortion for any reason? No. Men, 54 to 33. No. White men, 59 to 23. No. White women, 55 to 33 with no degree. White women, college degree, 48-17, yes. 48-37, yes. Interesting, too, by race. Women should, do you think it should be possible for women to legally obtain an abortion for any reason? By race, black, no, 40 to 37. Hispanic, yes, 45 to 38, which is a bit surprising. But nonetheless, the idea that this is a country that supports abortion on demand, the idea that there's any country on earth that supports abortion on demand is one of the biggest lies that the pro-abort left tells. There just isn't. There isn't. I saw some commentary about, the rich can always fly over to France and get their abortion. Mm-hmm. Pardon me. France prohibits abortions after 14 weeks. France, socialist France. We are an outlier with the most totalitarian states in the world when it comes to abortion on demand because of the pro-abortion left in some of the states. And now with the prospective overturning of Roe via Dobbs, the sane part of the country can move in a more sane direction that actually reflects popular will in addition to conforming with constitutional principles and the black letter of what is said in the Constitution.
And the insane part, like Illinois, what happens to the human life here?
It's devalued. It will continue to be devalued in places like Illinois and California. And if you want to run screaming off a cliff, you're allowed to do that in a free society. If you want to destroy your community, if you want to attack institutions that provide the bedrock of Western civilization, you're allowed to do that in a free society. Let's just hope there are more forces on the other side to prevent you from doing it. Nathan in Crown Point.
Yeah, hi. I was just wondering, do you think women would be equally offended if there were laws limiting how many kids they could have? Like they would keep them out of spite at this point?
I don't know.
As a way to promote the culture of life is to deny people something and they'll want it?
Well, reverse psychology. I don't know. I mean, this pro-abort left, there's EPGers too. You didn't hear them screaming about China's one-child policy for the 35 years that was in effect and all the baby girls that were murdered in China. Tom in Blue Island.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, John. Roe has not been a very big decision. All it has done is compromise the most important job of any human being, the mother procreating the species. And not only have untold millions of children died, untold millions of women's lives have been ruined after they've done this and have never recovered from the fact that they were aware of what they did.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Well, I mean, again, I learned this very early on in the pro-life movement from pro-life heroines like Jill Stanek and Karen Hayes and others that abortion hurts women. That's also lost in this discussion. Abortion hurts women. The physical and the mental repercussions, the guilt. And this is why I'm always quick to say this is not castigating women who've had an abortion. This is trying to sort of bring them back from that horror to a better place with a better understanding. So it's not sitting in judgment, which is what the left tries to convince women that pro-lifers are doing. It's not what the pro-life movement is at its best. It's a hospital that helps women recover from decisions they perhaps regret. Marty in Naperville.
Good morning. You want to see somebody on the left who's all this pro-abortion, blah, 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 look at them and say, what do you think of the death penalty? And watch the dumb look they get on their face and then the excuse they come up with how that's wrong to kill someone. It's actually kind of amazing. Oh, by the way, I saw 2,000 Mules last night. Pretty good. You should see it. Very, very informative. More facts than just, guessing, which the left does. But have a good day.
Thanks, Marty. And we'll get Amy Jacobson for view when she comes back tomorrow. Bob, Edison Park.
Yeah, Dan and John, I got a quick question. Where is the Catholic Archdiocese on this? You would think they would be pushing back maybe on the other side, praising this. Heaven forbid even planning a counter demonstration to say that their support for this. Hasn't this been their de facto money-raising issue since Roe v. Wade came into the picture? You know, they remind me of down in the South, the preachers. They wanted alcohol illegal because they wanted the bootleggers around so they could preach against alcohol. The Catholic Church is so hypocritical on many issues, but this is just a standout. I looked on the Archdiocese website. Zero about even pray for this matter. They're not even talking about praying that this gets overturned, and it's shocking, guys.
Well, thanks for the call, Bob. Well, I mean, you don't want Cardinal Supich to ruin his friendship with J.B. Pritzker.
Oh, you mean the friendship about let's keep people out of church, J.B.?
Yeah, I mean, you don't, right. I mean, I hate for anything to come between Cardinal Supich and J.B. Pritzker, like, you know, promotion of the culture of life. I mean, I don't want to make it uncomfortable for the Cardinal to offend his friend.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. And for Amy, this morning is JohnCassNews.com's John Cass.
Hey, Dan. Hey, everybody.
Chicago Way Podcast. You can also find at JohnCassNews.com. We've had Gary Rabine on this week. We've had Jesse Sullivan on this week in our continuing effort to bring you not just the gubernatorial candidates, but we'll get to congressional candidates, too, in some of the important races in the region and the state. Between now and June 28th, primary day. Today we're going to hear from Darren Bailey, State Senator Darren Bailey, who's got a new ad up. Here it is.
These are the hands of a farmer, strong and determined. A grandfather's hands, supportive and caring. Hands of a state senator who protects life and our freedoms. I know something about this man, Darren Bailey, because I joined him to restore Illinois' greatness. Together, we'll cut taxes, fund the police, and impose term limits. Join us, the only true conservative Republican team, and let's put Illinois' future in these safe hands.
So, of course, that was Stephanie Trussell, his running mate, as the narrator in that spot. For state of play from Senator Bailey's perspective, by the way, as I've disclosed any number of times, but I'll do so again, I'm running an independent expenditure pack that is supporting Darren Bailey. I'm obviously supporting Darren Bailey, so you can factor that in however you see fit. Senator Bailey, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, good morning, Dan. It's an honor to be with you this morning. Thanks for the opportunity.
So let's start with this branding campaign that is being imposed upon you by Richard Ervin. And he's doing the same to Jesse Sullivan to a lesser extent. That you voted for Joe Biden. He's got you with the clip saying, I might have voted for Joe Biden. And Darren Bailey, thus, is an Obama-loving Biden voter, not a conservative, and you can't vote for him, which is what he's saying. I mean, that's not a mischaracterization of what he's saying. That's what he's saying. That's what the ads imply.
Yeah, and I do want to clear something up. Although, as you stated, he is being deceitful about me. A quick study will show that he certainly is not being deceitful about Sullivan. He is telling the truth about Sullivan, but unfortunately, he's chosen to the wrong route to do a smear campaign. It's the exact same messaging that I had pushed against me in 2018 when I beat a tax hiking Republican 60-40 in the most conservative district in the state. So, absolute nonsense. Can you imagine a man like this being governor that can't tell the truth now and smears lies? And I can't imagine what that would be like if someone like that were ever allowed in.
Well, so Darren, so explain the clip that people have heard on TV that's been in their mailboxes. I might have voted for Joe Biden. Give us the context of what that references.
So in 2008, Cindy and I did indeed pull a Democrat ballot, the only time in our life we ever did that. And the reason that we did that was because Rush Limbaugh was promoting Operation Chaos. Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama were fighting each other, and Rush Limbaugh was asking people to pull the Democrat ballot if you didn't have a race, you know, in your state on the Republican ballot or locally that you needed to support. And here in Illinois and in Clay County where I live, we did not. So we did that. I show up in the ballot box, and I'm standing there realizing that I pull up the Democrat ballot, and I'm looking at it, and I can't vote for either one of these two people. I simply can't do it. And what I don't know if I didn't vote, and this so I'm telling a person this story in Chicago, and I'm being recorded, you know, and I've told this story many times because they said, well, who'd you vote for? I said, well, I'm a farmer, and that was a busy time of year, and we're in and out voting, and I got myself in a situation that, good grief, morally, I literally can't vote for these people. But Joe Biden was on the ticket. But by the time the primary got to Illinois, Joe Biden was out of the race. So I'm standing there trying to figure out what to do and needing to get back to work. And I think that, you know, the person said, well, who'd you vote for? And I said, well, I don't know that I don't know. But I said I may have voted for. And then I said that. Because I knew that he was off the ballot. So that's, bam, there you had your clip, and that's what that was all about. So that was the explanation of the 2008 drama. I was a Trump delegate in 2020, and the nonsense of saying that I'm a liberal Republican is absolutely, it's absurd. And that's what politicians do. That's what some of these good, they spin their troubles off of them, the spin zone. They make it your situation. So that's what he's doing with this nonsense.
Senator, I completely agree with you that you're not a liberal in the race. And I thought it made me laugh when the idea came up. But the hesitancy in just answering this straight out is not consistent with your campaign or the sense you project to the voters. So did you vote for Obama? I mean, I understand it was
no, no, thank you. No, no, never voted. No, I have never supported a Democrat. And I can assure you, I did not vote for Hillary. I did not vote for Obama. And in accordance with the duty, down the Democrat ballot and the vote, that was 2008. I've never really necessarily been a political student until I got involved fighting a tax-hawking Republican in 2017. No, I've never voted for Joe Biden or Hillary Clinton.
And do you think that the campaign against you, do you think it's having an effect? Do you think that you're responding effectively enough such that people know that this is dishonest? This is really, it's really fraudulent. I mean, in the context of Joe Biden being president, to say voted for Joe Biden, that what they're trying to do is make it sound like, oh, you voted for Joe Biden in 2020 right, against Trump. Of course, that's what they're trying to do. So, right. But are people falling for it in your assessment?
Well, it there's no doubt. There's a poll out from a group that just recently been released, and I can attest to the fact that I believe that poll is completely false. We have internal polling that we're running, so we believe we are still in the lead. But yes, it has allowed Richard Irvin to come up in the polls. It's quite interesting because everyone else has fallen in the polls. We are maintaining our position that we've always had, and what we believe is taking place is that people are, you know, in 2017 when I won, we were outspent 6-1. So far to date, we have been outspent 39-1. I mean, I can't imagine what Mr. Griffin is thinking with his money being wasted such as it is, but that's the way it is. But so far, people are seeing these ads, and there's so much animosity against Pritzker that I believe they're looking at this and they're thinking, great, somebody else is running against Pritzker. So that's the first notion. And then as they continue to get this nonsense in the mail, we've had people literally come up to us and tell us, well, we had no idea who you are, but we out of curiosity, we wanted to find out who you are, and we believe all this advertisement's a lying about you. And so that's what seems to be happening, number one. And number two, with the recent arrival of some amazing funding, we are, after Mother's Day next week, we will be pushing back and getting, you know, our story out. We wanted to make sure everybody knew who I was, and that's why we're pushing this, you know, the positive campaign. It worked for us in 2017, and we believe it's going to work for us again.
I've never hunted on your lands, but I would offer some advice now that I'm not at the paper, but still writing about politics. It's to just come direct. You're like, you know, the way you'd talk to somebody on your farm, the way you'd talk to anybody, you just speak it out plain. Now, I got another question to ask you, and that is, let's say, just for the so that people understand, if Richard Ervin is the Republican who is elected, let's say he's elected, let's say J.B. Pritzker breaks both his legs just by standing there,
and
can't campaign, just standing there looking at watching TV, and he can't campaign, and Ervin wins. What happens to the Republican Party if Ervin wins?
Conservatism and the Republican brand, you know, it's almost gone now, but that will completely disappear. And I've said that from day one. I've said there's one thing worse than electing Pritzker for four more years, and that is electing the wrong Republican. And I was saying that long before Richard Ervin showed up on the scene. So this man is he's a liar. He's a quick study into his, you know, the city of Aurora, which he has been mayor of, is the highest taxed city in the nation. Their pension system is a disaster. He is a staunch BLM supporter. I mean, this everything that a Republican should stand for, this man stands for none of it. He wouldn't even answer the question regarding, you know, the Roe versus Wade discussion that's coming out. He wouldn't even answer that a few days ago.
Mm-hmm. And as I noted on this show, because it's fact, he and Avery Bourne refusing to fill out the Illinois Right to Life questionnaire. I assume you're not refusing to fill out that questionnaire.
Well, not only that, but I've been endorsed by every pro-life, pro-family organization in the state. So I have those endorsements. I have the endorsement of the Freedom-Loving Motorcycle Riders 8-8, and we expect that there will be more of those the endorsements that matter coming.
It's always the accent on the other syllable in Southern Illinois. So I always call abate abate, but down in Southern Clay County, it's abate. It's interesting. It's interesting to note. That's why I say this. See, you know, people want you to hide your accent, and you probably say, "I have the accent." I understand that too.
But, I don't have an accent.
Yeah, please.
Come on. Okay. Everybody knows. South side of Chicago. Yeah. There's no accent here, buddy.
The King's English over here. Right. Yeah, of course.
Thank you, Your Highness.
But I still go back to this. I mean, I think that's like, I think you, it's sort of what John was saying too, right? You lean into who you are. That's what you've done all your life and every other pursuit, including politics. And that's what you got to do in this race.
Nope. I appreciate that. And that's what, as this nonsense ramps up, I appreciate hearing that. Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about your value proposition to reestablish what that is, too. I mean, you mentioned a little bit your run for rep, again, in a Republican primary where you defeated David Rice, the incumbent, and it was over his vote for the Rauner tax increase. So that's worth noting. But then your value proposition now, particularly coming through the pandemic, where your profile was really raised as one of 59 state senators because of your opposition to J.B. Pritzker's COVID policies.
Right. Standing up and pushing back against that when no one else would, you know, being the only person that was kicked out of General Assembly for standing up against the mask mandate, because, you know, a lot of people forget to remember that, you know, the party in control makes the rules in Illinois, and the Democrats have the supermajority. And, you know, for the first time ever, we saw bills, fast-track bills this last session that didn't even come through committee because they suspended the rules. So a bill could fast-track right to the floor. And I mean, you know, everything that we stand for, we're certainly we're in danger of. So you get in, and that's what the concern is with someone like Richard Urban coming in with being supported by, you know, so many, you know, staunch Republican organizations, that he will simply be a puppet and that nothing will really change. Because when we get in, we've got to, you know, day one, we're going to clean house. You know, we've heard so much about the Illinois State Board of Education and all this drama and trauma against our schools. Well, those positions are handpicked by the governor. So, you know, the Illinois State Police with our FOIA cards being delayed. Well, we clean house, we get the directors out, we get the deputy directors out, we put men and women in, who are going to have a backbone, who are going to actually do something. And then we begin to build what's called the zero-based budget. Everybody wants to know, well, how are you going to save money and how are you going to cut the spending? We have a zero-based budget where every agency director starts at zero, and we build our own budget within that. And I'm telling you, 2 years as a state rep and 2 years as a Senate, I've seen the waste. It's immense, and it's disgusting.
And on speaking of, since you mentioned schools, the Opportunity Scholarship Program, that could potentially be on the chopping block if Pritzker was reelected with Democrat socialist supermajorities. And Irvin has been a church mouse on the issue. I know some of the other candidates are proponents, like Gary Rabine, proponents of the school choice program, and to his credit. But your view, because, you know, a lot of some of those folks in Southern Illinois, as you well know, sort of cozy with the teachers union and sort of reticent to support tax credit scholarships where there aren't necessarily a lot of private schools. So where are you on that?
Well, it is the teachers' union that right now today is attacking our schools. It is the teachers' union. You know, SB 818, the sex education bill, that was essentially sponsored by Illinois Education Association and Planned Parenthood. So unfortunately, the teachers' union has teamed themselves up with some a pretty dangerous organization. So yes, I served 17 years on the North Clay School Board. I know about schools and their board members' responsibilities. I got off of that. Cindy and I started Full Armor Christian Academy. We have over 360 students preschool through high school right now. So absolutely, competition is good. We need school choice. We need a voucher system. The money should follow the child. And I've already spoken on that in committee and on the floor. So, and then I've actually, this is kind of like a lawsuit. I'm not just talking about it. I'm actually doing something about it.
In the political map, it seems that the Republicans are giving up on Cook County, even though I know that there are many people in Cook County who are conservative and who support your campaign. And I'm wondering, why hasn't the Republican Party found a candidate to face up to Toni Preckwinkle, or as I call her, Toni Taxwinkle, the boss of the Cook County Democratic Party, the president of the Cook County Board, to make this case about crime that you make, about taxes, and about schools? Why doesn't the Republican Party do that?
Because the Republican Party, as you and I know it right now, is absolutely void of leadership. They don't. I don't even think they want to be in the driver's seat. I think the typical Republican elected official right now enjoys the position of being in the minority. You know, if you start making decisions and you start to developing policy, then you got a whole new level of responsibility before you. And as a business owner, as a farmer, those decisions that we make every day determine what next year is going to be like, whether we succeed or fail. And your typical Republican, elected officials garnering a paycheck, they're garnering their pension, they're garnering their health insurance. Life's pretty good for them. And they can go back to their district and they can tell their constituents, man, I'm fighting for you, I'm trying, but all the while doing absolutely nothing and allowing the Democrats to be in the supermajority. That's the typical Republican establishment. We need to get into many of our Republican parties and fill those precincts up. We need new leadership. All the way from the top, from the state party, we have no leadership. We've seen the RNC, one of the RNC chairs get behind the Urban campaign. This man has, there's hardly any proof that he is an actual true Republican. That is the problem with the Illinois Republican Party. Weak leadership, and it's got to change, and we the people can change that.
He is Darren Bailey, State Senator Darren Bailey, Republican candidate for governor. For more information on his candidacy and campaign, BaileyForIllinois.com, BaileyForIllinois.com. Darren, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you.
And he joined us on the Turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and John Cass is in for Amy J. This morning, johncassnews.com for his columns, the Chicago A podcast, and more.
Thank you, Dan.
Yes.
Thank you, everybody.
Yes.
Keep subscribing because, I have bills, too.
That's right.
I want to keep writing.
You didn't get one of those sweet guaranteed seven-figure pensions from the Tribune that the teachers' unions enjoy.
I did get a few knives in my back, though. I thought I'd pawn them. You know, if I could sell them.
Sure, the same old knives. By the way, that's a good flick, if people haven't seen it. Same old knives, a little spy thriller, Chris Pratt, Thandie Newton on Amazon.
Loved it.
Yeah. All right, if you want a little preview of what things are going to be like in Illinois, well, you've got it from Jelly Belly this week with his press conference and his hand-wringing and histrionics. You got it from Gavin Newsom out in California, too. I mean, this is where the battles will be if the draft opinion in the Dobbs case is the final opinion in substance, then you're going to be in the hearts and minds business in places like Illinois and California and other states because you heard the posture of Spalding here in Illinois. Here's Newsom in California.
Consistently opposing all of those supports. Hell, they don't even believe in climate science. Talk to me about being pro-life. Spare me. Your body, your choice. It's a hell of a moment to live in. But like you say, we will not be defeated. We will stand tall, we will stand firm, and we will affirm the constitutionally protected rights of women and girls, their reproductive rights and freedoms in California. And we will assert ourselves, as I said, as Californians by punching above our weight, working with other like-minded leaders and governors and legislatures all across this country. And we're not going to roll over. We will not back down. And we will continue to fill in the gaps and address the disparities that continue to persist even in a state like ours, even in California.
Oh, no. Disparities in California? No. Say it ain't so. Here's the thing. You know, you expect that from the left. That's every issue. It's always total war with the left. The difference on the life issue is the sustained fight from pro-lifers over five decades. So the difference between pro-lifers who are conservative versus conservatives on so many other issues is those pro-lifers who are animated by promoting a culture of life from conception to natural death. They don't go away. You want total war? We'll give you total war in our way, not in your way, but in our way. So, you know, pro-lifers, as demure as they usually are, they're also sort of the Moulin Labe crowd. And this is why, frankly, we're on the cusp of this moment, is because of that sustained willingness to make the case, to present the evidence over 50 years. It's a lesson for conservatives on a range of other issues.
It's informed by faith.
Yes, so much of it, and that's why.
And that's why it's sustained, because faith is greater than anything.
Rusty Reno, writing in First Things, had a good riff on this, talking about the attack at the Supreme Court, using the leak as the jumping off point to talk about the left more generally. Our liberal elite, which controls nearly every major institution in society, cultivates a total war mentality. one that will stop at nothing to maintain control. This mentality encourages the very people who should be defending our core institutions to destroy them rather than allow the slightest diminution of elite power, which is what you see going on right now with the Supreme Court, the latest target. And he goes on, not a single member of the liberal establishment has been held accountable for the instances of damage he's discussing. No journalist's career was sidetracked for having peddled falsehoods about Russian collusion with the Trump campaign. Instead, they got Pulitzers. The same holds for public officials, university presidents, foundation heads, the same retired intelligence bigwigs who promoted the Hunter Biden laptop story, a hoax, continue to appear on TV, shamelessly pretending to speak with authority. And so you would have the same sort of situation here if and when the leaker is discovered, and assuming that the leaker is part of the pro-abortion opposition to the Alito majority opinion. Rusty Reno goes on to quote Huey Long, of all people, from, you know, the Bayou, the populist politician from the Bayou. He was reputed to have responded to attacks against him from establishment liberals, saying, sure, we'll have fascism in this country, and we'll call it anti-fascism. And Rusty Reno reformulates that observation. Sure, we'll have anti-liberalism in this country, and we'll call it a defense of liberalism. And isn't that what the left is doing now? Save our democracy by burning it down. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Clark Forsyth, senior counsel at Americans United for Life, and author of Abuse of Discretion, The Inside Story of Roe v. Wade. Clark, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thanks, John and Dan.
Let's start with, you know, sort of Gavin Newsom's cri de coeur for not only Californians but the rest of the nation, that if the Dobbs decision in its publicized form is what is final and promulgated by the court, that we'll have this national fight. I mean, you were somebody who was arguing for Roe v. Wade to be overturned, not abortion outlawed at the federal level, but specifically so that the states would have self-determination on the issue decades ago, and now we're on the precipice of that moment.
Exactly. I'm concerned that many Americans think that the court's opinion means the court's about to make abortion illegal, but what it means is that it is the issue is decentralized and sent back to the states, and the law on the states, on the books in the states, can be enforced. And so it goes back to the hands of the people, and the people can decide the issue through their elected representatives at the local level.
And so what's your response when you hear some of the hysterics from Kamala Harris, how dare these Republicans, and from Gavin Newsom, you know, the battle cry? What's your response to them?
Well, it's posturing for their base. It's posturing, but the American people will have a voice. We'll be able to go to the midterm elections in November and state and federal, and finally have a voice on who we want. And the politicians at the local level will no longer be able to simply spout the Supreme Court's decided it. They will be responsible. So when you vote for a governor, an attorney general, a state senator, state rep, those are the ones who are going to be making the decision, and they can't punt it to the Supreme Court. So it will be democracy. It will be representative government. And that's going to be good for the court, and it's going to be good for the country and good for our politics.
Exactly. And as a supporter of life and somewhat of a Federalist, I have to ask you, do you think the Republican Party has prepared the people in the country to understand that a reversal of Roe versus Wade is just what you said, a chance for the people to decide through their representatives what they want? Or has it been a case where they've been, I guess, pleased to not deal with it and not seed the ground and plow the ground and get it ready?
Well, in part, it's the constant obstacle of being able to communicate through the noise. And so there's going to be a lot of educational work that's necessary, starting with the leak and moving forward through the decision itself and to the November elections. But in fact, Republicans have passed strong legislation in many states. If the decision is finalized today, tomorrow, there will be 21 states with enforceable gestational limits. But in 29 states in the District of Columbia, there will be no abortion limits before 5 months or even throughout pregnancy. Then Illinois and New York and California. But Republicans and others in 21 states have passed strong gestational limits, and they hopefully will be enforced if public officials stand up and do their job.
How confident are you that whoever leaked this will be identified, and how important is it that that happens?
Well, I think for the court, I mean, this was a destructive act. It was an attack on the court. And, I mean, leaks have happened before, but not quite to this extent that an entire majority opinion that's pending has been released. The court has its procedures and its enforcement authorities, and I'm sure that's going on right now. I think it might even be counterproductive, the leak, meaning that the court has been attacked, for years, and the nominees have been attacked for years, precisely because of the abortion issue. And this is the latest and the most direct attack on the court as an institution. And maybe Chief Justice Roberts will say this is not going to stop until we release our grip on this issue and return it to the people and decentralize it. So maybe it will induce him to join the five and make it a 6-3 overruling. I hope that happens.
And is it your view that they should not wait till the end of the term, which is more likely would come at the end of June, this opinion, and move this into the public arena post-haste?
There seems to be a diminishing reason for waiting until the end of the term. The Chief Justice can say this will come down in 2 weeks and get your opinions, get your other opinions, dissents, concurrences ready. So there is that capacity, and I think there's reason to think it will come down sooner.
Bill Gates tweeted out this, and this is more of a policy issue. But you're an officer of the court, but you're also a policy thinker too, and you've dealt with the specious arguments of the pro boards for a long time. Bill Gates tweeting out, "I was shocked to wake up to the news this morning. A reversal of Roe v. Wade would set us back 50 years and disproportionately impact the most vulnerable women in society. I support a women's right to make their own decisions about their health care." This is one of the Pat lines. We're turning back the clock, number one, and number two, we're turning back the clock and we're going to somehow enslave women, and particularly the most vulnerable women. How do you respond to that assertion?
He doesn't cite any empirical data, and there isn't any empirical data that shows that abortion contributes to health care. Abortion isn't health care. Women don't seek abortion for health reasons. They seek them for, in the vast majority of cases, for personal reasons, social reasons. It's not healthcare. And there is no empirical evidence that abortion promotes women's equality. Even late-term abortions are performed for the same reason as early-term abortions. And, of course, the truly health-threatening risks to women in pregnancy are less than one-half of 1%. And in those cases, there are doctors with long-standing procedures and traditions to, evacuate the uterus, have a premature delivery in the interests of the mother and the child's health. So that is also always the posture. But there is really no empirical evidence to support the notion that this is either health care or promotes women's equality.
He is Clark Forsyth, senior counsel at Americans United for Life, author of Abuse of Discretion, The Inside Story of Roe v. Wade. Clark, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan, John.
Thank you, sir.
He joined us on the Turnkey.pro answer line.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy.
Not.
But in for Amy this morning, as I was about to say. You can hear from that gravelly voice. That's not Amy. That's John Cass, johncassnews.com.
Hello.
Oh, that's better. Oh, that's my sing song.
Not.
St. Dominic in Bolingbrook. I've been meaning to get to this story all week, so now we're going to get to it. St. Dominic in Bolingbrook is a Catholic school in the Joliet Diocese that is closing. And the parents, many of the parents at St. Dominic, including those who've emailed our show, said they were completely blindsided by the administration on the as to the announcement that the school would be closing. And the Joliet Diocese and the local administrators there, St. Dominic, are citing enrollment declines as the reason for the closure. Boy, this really opens up a number of issues, starting with, how do you have enrollment declines in this environment over the last 2 years? When you have people flocking from the government schools to Catholic schools, at least where you have leadership that doesn't fold in with the state. Joliet School Superintendent Michael Boyle, are you listening? Mm-hmm. When you don't fold in the state and you give parents an alternative, they seek that alternative to have their kids in school because they know that's the best place for them, not behind a computer screen doing Zoom for a year. WGN, to their credit, covered this story a bit, and you hear from some of the parents who were outside the school organizing a little protest of the closure.
Parents and parish members say St. Dominic Catholic School is more than its name.
It's not a school. It's another home. It's another family.
And now
there was zero notice, zero warning that this was coming.
It's closing down.
Honestly, I felt like the floor had been ripped out from underneath me.
There was no phone call, no town hall meeting. Instead, parents got the news in a letter Friday after school.
It's really our, you know, in a lot of ways, our spiritual home. And it feels very much like it was just pulled out from underneath us.
We were given no opportunities to fix it.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. We've talked a lot about Catholic schools, too, over the last 2 years, both with respect to pandemic policy as well as with respect to curricula capitulation, like at Loyola Academy in Wilmette, like at Fenwick, like at Bennett Academy, my alma mater. Where's Bishop Hicks? Where's Michael Boyle? Where are parents putting any pressure on him? I know there's a parents group that's tried to meet with Bishop Hicks about the usurpation of Bennett by the school board, the appointed school board there, and the abdication, shameful abdication by the Benedictines of the school. Where's Bishop Hicks? Is this thing on? Michael Boyle? How do you have a school closure in an environment where you have an expanding school choice program called the Opportunity Tax Credit, Empower Illinois, combined with, again, parents looking for alternatives? How do you have, like, families of faith down in Shanahan that's bursting at the seams and a little bit north of there in Bolingbrook? You can't put together a couple of hundred kids for St. Dominic to keep that school thriving, open and thriving? That's curious to me.
It's unsettling. I mean, the facts are that people were dying to get kids in school, right? How do you close a school?
Well, and how do you blindside your parents? This from a school board member there, an email to the show. I'm a member of the school board and finance board. We put together the budget for next year. We currently have approximately 140 students that are enrolled, which is a drop from last year. But in looking at the diocese, not the smallest school by far. As a result, the budget turned in was not that great. We were going to have a deficit for next school year. However, the diocese had told us throughout the year that they would work with us to get through any challenges we had. The budget was turned in the second week in April. The school is run by a principal who's a nun, and there are also two teachers at the school from the same order. Unknown to the parents, including me, until this weekend, and this was emailed to me this past weekend. The order had told the school that the principal was moving to another assignment. They were not replacing her, so the school was going to have to find another alternative, likely a lay principal. That also happened in April. The diocese and the parish have been actively collecting for St. Dominic through the end of April. The school had its largest fundraiser on April 23rd, a dinner which was in which the auction collected about $30,000, and this was to replace the smart boards in the classrooms next year. Further, Empower Illinois, through the diocese, collected several large donations in April, and one was collected last week for around $20,000. For the parents to get a note from the school stating the school was closing a week after the fundraiser we were all seeing came as a complete surprise. I believe the catalyst for this rash decision was the principal change in the cost for next year. Okay, but here again, you have a Catholic school operating like a public school, not on the issue of closure, because, of course, you never close a government school. They've got an endless amount of money from which to extract, called your homes. But with a Catholic school, the issue is communication and inclusion in a decision as momentous as closure, and then leaving these parents scrambling to find another school and rework their lives as well, particularly when, you have as sort of a default – you just have much more parental involvement, generally speaking, because it's necessary, particularly in the fundraising piece of it. And they're running around collecting money, and there's no indication given that some threshold needs to be met by date certain or this is going to happen. This is sort of like what happened when they closed Driscoll in the Western Burbs. And it's just not a way for the diocese to behave. It's not a way to promote Catholic education. It's not a way to respect the sacrifices that parents make to send their kids to Catholic school.
Priorities, Dan.
I just don't understand how these organizations operate anymore.
I'm speaking as a Christian but not Catholic,
right?
So I'm not passing judgment on the church, but you had a moral crisis for years that has sapped the church, sapped donations, the sexual abuse of children by priests. And that cost the church and all of us a great deal, because they lost their moral authority. Now you have this opportunity to bring kids back to the church. Wouldn't you think that it's an avenue to bring and grow the Christian community? I'm not trying to pass judgment and tell people.
No, everything you said is correct.
On trillions of dollars, man.
Everything you said is correct. It's like talking about the Republican Party in the state. You never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity, because there's just no courage at the leadership level here. The Opportunity Scholarship Program and Supich and some of the priests and some of the schools. But, these Catholic schools, with few exceptions, I don't know, but I hear from people who do and that are involved, like a Mount Carmel and a Brother Rice are holding out, where my oldest nephew goes. It's Marmion that seems to be holding out. But they're few and far between. And then the leadership at the Arch or in the Joliet Diocese, which we're talking about here, is so feeble.
Well, he's just an appointee of Supich, right? Hicks.
I just don't understand. I don't understand how you just throw away Catholic education. I just don't understand how you throw away these schools and parishes and the faith generally right behind it. What is the point? What is your company? And these are people who are, take the vows to live their life in furtherance of the catechism and in glory to God. Is that what we're seeing happen? Because maybe I'm confused because I'm not seeing it. I'm just not seeing it. I'm not seeing it generally. I see exceptions to what I'm seeing generally, but I'm not seeing it generally. There are these little outposts of Catholic thought and education in Chicagoland where they used to be dominant. And now what's dominant is, to borrow a phrase from a parent at Loyola in Wilmette, the Catholic ornamentation and liberation theology as the ideology that's infused throughout the school, surrendering the school to neo-Jacobins the way that Bennett Academy did. That's what I see generally.
The long march through the institutions has destroyed everything the left touches, everything. Journalism, the church, the courts, everything they touch.
I got a nominee.
For the Mutza?
No, I got a nominee for the new superintendent of the Joliet schools. Or maybe the Chicago Arch, or maybe the next cardinal. Why not?
Let's hear it.
Her name is her name.
Okay.
Why not? That's just an anachronism.
Uh-huh.
Her name is Robin Henderson Espinoza. She's Nashville-based, but I'm sure she'll move. She is a trans, queer, Latinx, neurodivergent theologian.
Neurodivergent? What does that mean? She's of two minds?
She's a trans, queer, Latinx, neurodivergent theologian. John, just be an ally. Just be an ally,
that'll
please.
Be the day. All right, go
the
on.
Not yet is the imaginal space of becoming. The not yet is in the space of a realized utopia. The not yet is the Christian message that we must embody in critical and creative ways to steward a narrative that calls us into being human with one another again. That is the kind of hope I want to invite us to embody. That is the kind of queerness that I hope we can practice. One that reimagines language and practice and narratives that can be midwifed and stewarded through the imaginal. That is hope to me. That is the kind of power I think we have as a collective of believers, of doubters, of Christians, as those who are becoming.
I hate when I get it right through the imaginal. It always hurts.
You know what this is?
Deep thinking?
No, I'm holding up my hand. And I'm just offering it to your theologian. Okay? Take it. Nah. This is sickening. I mean, what is the... This is from a Catholic?
No, she's a Baptist minister, but I mean the Catholic Church, the Catholic Church doesn't care about you being Catholic anymore.
All right.
She could be the cardinal.
Imagining what? Imagining I am the truth and the light and the way, and no one comes to the Father but through me.
Well,
that's what do you have to imagine, honey?
Well, I mean, she's imagining the utopia that the reexamination and reformulation of narratives and human interaction in a more queer direction is going to propagate, John.
I just want to play video
How straightforward can she be? All right, here's my nominee. What do you think, Joliet Diocesan parents? Robin Henderson Espinoza, Nashville-based, but she could breathe. I think she's willing to move. Trans, queer, Latinx, neurodivergent public theologian. Principal at Bennett. Superintendent of Schools, Joliet, Cardinal Robin Henderson Espinoza. What do you think? James Westmont, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Thank you for letting me following that. I don't know how I can with that dizzy intellect there. Oh, my goodness. I forgot what I was going to say. But anyway, Our Lady of Peace at Darien, this happened a couple of years ago, right before the pandemic. He decided to shut it down without warning, where they could have, like you said, sees an ample opportunity to keep going. And they were pretty much in the same position as St. Dominic. I'm going to see a brother knight of mine who's from that parish. I'm going to try to get more info from him as well, because obviously to say it's mind-boggling, I think Robin made more sense than this.
But thanks for the call, James. Appreciate it. Mike Lombard.
Hey, Dan. I just I'm Catholic, and I was the church being the richest entity in the world. You think that they could probably, you know, foot the bill a little bit to get today's student to be tomorrow's Catholic? I mean, we're throwing our religion away. Our religion is being attacked regularly, daily, every day. On now that this pro-life thing is up in arms, you know, everybody's attacking anybody that supports pro-life, saying leave your religion out of it. There's just a basic moral code, even if there was no religion, not to be killing babies. I'm just, the world needs religion, and it seems like we're being abandoned by our faith, and I just wish that we could get back behind our church, would get back behind us, and we could, you know, move forward.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all I got to say.
Exactly. Thanks for calling. I mean, I understand the attacks are going to come from the Jacobins, the neo-Jacobins, like I said, but when they're coming from the altar, when they're coming from the superintendent of your school system, when they're coming from your titular diocesan or archdiocesan leadership, then it's a little bit more of a problem. Lee and Hammond.
Hey, guys. You know, the Catholic Church, to me, they've lost all relevance. You know, it's obvious they don't care about anything but the church and the Vatican. They don't care about the flock. The whole idea that they had nothing to say about this racism being taught in critical race theory to little children, to sexual grooming to little children, they had nothing to say about any of this. And even when it comes to, like, forced vaccinations, to where your rights to actually put in your body what you want instead of what some is mandated by Caesar, and they have nothing to say about any of this. They've lost all relevance as far as I'm concerned. That's why their numbers have fallen off the attendance in church.
Thanks for the call, Lee. It's worse than having nothing to say. They folded in. Yeah. So many of the schools have folded in on critical race theory curriculum, folded in to serve as sentinels of the state with lockdown policy and mandates. Tim DeKalb.
As a Christian, can't we just call these people satanic or demonic and just move on in that category? Why beat around the bush? I mean, this is right from the Garden of Eden, where the serpent says, "Did God really say?" Come on, let's just cut to the chase and get on with the saving of people.
Thanks, Tim.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and John Cass in for Amy J. this morning. JohnCassNews.com for his columns and podcasts. Buy a subscription for your mom for Mother's Day, why don't you?
The gift of common sense.
There it is.
Thank you.
John, Joy Behar, one of those man-hating shrews on this ghastly program called The View.
The flesh-eating harpies of The View.
Yes.
So I would put it.
She and her fellow magpies were kicking around this issue of the Dobbs decision that's pending and the overturning of Roe v. Wade. And she's pretty unhappy. Pretty unhappy. How unhappy? She's thinking about withholding sex and calling on her comrades in arms to do the same.
Women in the world have conducted sex strikes in history. In 2003, a sex strike helped to end Liberia's brutal civil war.
Yes,
and the woman who started it was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yes.
In 2009, Kenyan women enforced a sex ban until political infighting ceased. Within 1 week, there was a stable government. Okay?
Oh.
So we have more power than we think we have, and some of it could be right in the bedroom. Just saying.
A sex strike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Aristophanes is rolling over in his grave, and I think he might come back to life to find her.
Oh, I think she thought that this idea originated with Spike Lee's Chirac. I don't think she's familiar
right,
with Aristophanes
exactly.
And La Sestrada. But also to this, I mean, you know, insert, pun intended, your own Joy Behar withholding sex joke here. Okay, just do that privately to yourself.
I'm just going to go to Canada because I'm upset.
I'm
going to run away.
It's not even about this idea. It's about, is nobody curious? Does anybody take that stuff on question? Yeah, you hear the trained seals clapping in the audience.
Right.
The Liberia matter. The woman who won the Nobel Prize, Peace Prize that Behar referenced, Lema Gbowee said, the sex strike is the headline that sells, but the truth is that the greatest weapon of the Liberian women's movement were moral clarity, persistence, and patience. Nothing happened overnight. In fact, it took 3 years of community awareness, sit-ins, and nonviolent demonstrations staged by ordinary market women, years of gathering in the roads and eye-catching white T-shirts, demanding the attention of convoys of officials and media folks who would then glimpse the signs and the dancing, would hear the chanting and the singing. And then it was Christian and Muslim women banding together to end the violence and civil strife over years. That was a top line, you know, the sex strike and this, you know, and that just snaps everything back to where it needs to be, according or wherever Joy Behar says it needs to be. But the problem is that sort of cheap rah-rahing, people take that. I mean, yo, where's Mayorkas's disinformation governance board? I'm kidding. But this is like the quality of the discourse on something of such cultural and societal import as human life. I don't know. It's just depressing to me. Her unhappiness makes me unhappy, which is a topic we need an expert on, a doctor and a political scientist. We happen to have one. He's Dr. Ronald Dworkin, and he's got a piece on the politics of unhappiness at First Things. Dr. Dworkin, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So is Joy Behar, is she a prime example of the sort of politically obsessed unhappy person you're writing about?
No, she's not. I wrote about artificial unhappiness, which is different from general unhappiness. General unhappiness occurs when something immediate and direct affects your life and your happiness. And whatever you say on the abortion issue, it immediately and directly affects women's lives. This is not at all what I'm talking about. Artificial happiness is a general malaise that one feels, and one reaches for political concerns that are really not relevant to one's life, but you become obsessed with anyhow. So the abortion issue is directly and immediately affects women. And so
and men, by the way. And men, too.
And men too.
Yeah, right.
That's fine. But so that would not be what I was talking about here. That's a direct issue of immediate import to women. So that's not relevant to this, what I'm talking about in this article.
Well, so then develop that, the artificial unhappiness, because if you infuse politics into everything, I mean, these same people who say this shouldn't be a political issue, it's a medical issue, dishonestly, but I digress. So if you infuse politics into everything, even where it ostensibly doesn't belong, you say it belongs, though, then how do you distinguish artificial from real?
Well, the artificial happiness would be a case of you have a sensation of malaise, a sorrow of the soul, and you don't know what the reason is for, and you immediately search for reasons. We are sort of instinctively wired to do so. We want an explanation for our unhappiness, and there's no immediate and direct one. So we begin to go through the list of possibilities. And all those possibilities, in a way, have some connection to politics. And so if you have an unhappy relationship, you could always find some explanation based on gender politics. Or if you have some problem with your career, you could always say it was the unfairness of the system. There are ways to rationalize your difficult sensation and pronounce yourself unhappy because. And that's the artificial unhappiness that I'm talking about, which is quite general. It's quite pronounced. On both the left and the right in this country.
Yeah, it was interesting because there was a paper done talking about the presence of dark triad personality traits based on your political philosophy. And the study, and I'm forgetting the researchers now, I'd have to look it up, but it's pretty much at my fingertips. But anyway, the dark triad personality traits of psychopathy, Machiavellianism, and narcissism. And it was self-identified leftists who exhibited those dark triad personality traits at like a rate of like 2 to 1 versus conservatives. So, yeah, maybe there's distribution across the spectrum, but it seems to be predominant more so on the left.
I wouldn't really say so. The statistics I saw were a quarter of the Trump voters and a quarter of the Democrats. After every election, they're demoralized. Why are they demoralized? Because often politics does not directly affect their lives. Instead, they have found something to hope in, and the hope is what gives them happiness. and they hope for their candidate to win, even though the candidate may not actually be able to fix the problem. But the happiness is in the hope, and to lose the election is to dash their hope and to dash their only half for happiness. So it's much more deeply psychological than simply a policy won't be put into place. There's something much, much deeper, and it goes on both sides. It's not just one or the other. It goes on both sides, I believe.
So what is the cure? I would suggest go to church, light a candle, get on your knees,
well,
pray.
That was a time-honored cure.
Was?
Well, it was, because let me explain. There were three waves of dealing with this unhappiness, artificial unhappiness, unhappiness that has given a mass cause for large numbers of people. The first wave was your problem was neurotransmitters, and we will medicate you. The second wave was the problem was your value system. We will detach you from whatever makes you happy. These are the therapists who would do this. And the third wave, which we're in now, is the problem is reality, and we were going to fix your reality to make it better. We will give you virtual reality or some form of reality, new reality, and you can find what you hope for in that alternative reality. So these are the three waves of mass artificial unhappiness that I talk about. Right now, we're just at the beginning of the third wave. We don't know how technology – I don't personally think it's going to succeed, but that's the current wave right now, to fix your reality, to give you what you hope for and want in life, so to speak.
Is this third wave responsible for the popularity? Okay, a little too much information from John Cass here, but popularity of the open world video games, where people get into a reality and they can pretend to their heart's content that they're
very
a
much
gunfighter
so.
Named Arthur Morgan, and you know, if you give me,
but it's not, it,
give
it's
me lip, I'll blow your head off with a sawed-off shotgun, or whatever it is.
It's the games. It's also social media in the form of chatbots, apps that you can become friends with. It's in the form of sexual robots. You can get sexual satisfaction for if you feel lonely in your life. There are a variety of technologies that are emerging that are going to try to give you your happiness, that are going to replace your reality, which is dismal, and give you something to try to improve it or to give you a substitute. And it's not simply just the games. It's on a much higher level, and it crosses many more kinds of unhappiness we may experience.
Sounds like,
for example, the case of loneliness, 50% I think of Americans now are considered to be lonely. Well, these apps like Replica, for example, befriend people, and they're confidants. And so you have a substitute reality. You have a friend through artificial intelligence. So this is over and above what the therapist used to do or what the doctors used to do when they gave medication for unhappiness. This is a new trend.
You ever watch Star Trek?
Years ago.
I know I sound like a geek, but I don't care. There was one of the episodes, I think the earliest episode.
I know what you're talking about. It's the first year episode. Go ahead.
About the Talosians, the people that would they would take people off their spaceships and basically live through their experiences, keep them in zoos and live through their experience. And I would think that was a terrifying prospect when I was, 10-year-old boy. But now I see it happening, right? I
mean, yes, and in that episode, I think it's the very first episode of Star Trek, the Talosian tells Captain Kirk at the very end of that show, Captain Kirk, you have reality. Captain Pike has something different. Hopefully your world is as pleasant as his. So it's true. You're right. I think that is sort of a realization through technology of what that was described in that Star Trek episode. We will give you an alternative reality where you'll have a substitute for all the things you want in real life you can't get. We will give it to you through technology, through imagining, through virtual reality and artificial intelligence and all the other methods of getting the substitute reality.
Dan's smirking, but I would say I would add drugs to that component. And there you have it.
Well, also,
everybody's happy.
Look, and this is only going to be exacerbated as we're on the cusp of the metaverse. So, go ahead. I'm sorry, Doctor.
The drugs, by the way, were the first way. The drugs were the argument that your unhappiness is resulting from a neurotransmitter imbalance. Therefore, we will medicate you with antidepressants. That started in the 1960s and 70s and certainly in the 80s with Prozac. So that's been around for quite some time. This is something very different. The medication model for unhappiness is still around, of course, but we're going into what I would consider to be the technological model or solution to unhappiness.
He is Dr. Ronald Dworkin, and he's a physician and political scientist. His piece at firstthings.com, The Politics of Unhappiness. Dr. Dworkin, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And he joined us on Turnkey.pro Answer Line.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.